We knew that we wanted to do something original. We knew that we wanted to break new ground. We knew we wanted to wed horns into the actual composition and not let the brass just be playing riffs behind the song or behind the singer. We wanted to make that an integral part of the band. But not only that, we wanted to open up the concept of rock songwriting. We wanted to be able to play something that as far out as you know, Frank Zappa, and still be able to dance to it, you know, and still have it, you know, be able to be programmed on radio.
Does anybody really know what time it is? Does anybody really care? If so, I can't imagine why. We've all got time enough to cry.
We were lucky to have happened at a time when, you know, the music industry was very open. People who were running the record companies, the people who were the A&R people, the people who were programming radio, FM radio. Everybody's very open to all of that. I don't know what it would be like if a band like CTA was evolving now. I think it would be a very difficult thing. Hi, this is Robert Lamb of Chicago, in the studio for Chicago Transit Authority.
Chicago Transit Authority was both the name of the band as well as the eponymous first album. Chicago's lineup then was led by under-recognized triple threat singer, songwriter, guitarist Terry Kath, bass guitarist, vocalist Peter Cetera, drummer Danny Serafine, trombonist Jim Panko, trumpet player Lee Lochnang, sax and woodwinds by Walter Perezader, and keyboardist, vocalist, songwriter Robert Lamb. These seven guys in the original band Chicago Transit Authority were so good in so very many ways that they blew away all the conventional wisdom about what a rock band could be. So uncommonly talented that their debut in 1969 required it to be a double album. Chicago Transit Authority spawned three big hits, Does Anybody Know What Time It Is?, Beginnings, and Questions 67 and 68, while peaking at number 17 sales in the U.S. and doing even better showing at number 9 in the U.K. The double album debut spent 171 weeks on the sales charts, eventually topping sales of over 2 million. It was Terry Kath and Walter Perezader that first formed the band that would eventually become Chicago Transit Authority when they met in 1963, playing in the backup band for Dick Clark's Traveling Cavalcade of Stars. By 1967, Kath and Perezader had formed their own band, The Missing Links, and recruited keyboard player and singer Robert Lamb. Times were hard, and they were starving doing their own original music. They needed to change. Here's Robert Lamb in the studio.
Okay, no more Missing Links. We want to put together, you know, a bigger ensemble and play. Basically, they wanted to play, you know, Memphis stuff. You know, a Memphis horn band, and that's pretty much what our repertoire started out being. That's playing in the clubs in Chicago. So, you know, we played all the Stax Volt stuff. We played, you know, Wilson Pickett stuff. We played Otis Redding stuff. Played James Brown stuff, and like that.
But it was it great music. I mean, music that is dear to my heart.
Oh, it's the music that we all loved and grew up with. So,
but at this point, it was still covers of the music that you heard basically on
pretty
the radio.
Pretty much. The first year, by the end of the first year, we were already doing. We were doing most of the Sgt. Pepper album because there was brass on that, so we could do that.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
And we were doing some Mothers of Invention stuff. We were doing Hendrix tunes with horn charts.
Wow.
You know, because Terry could do the Hendrix stuff like crazy. Mm. And we also began. I think we were doing. Does anybody really know what time it is? We were beginning to do some of the songs that I had just started writing.
Wow.
You know, the club owners didn't dig it, you know, and the people.
Why?
They wanted to hear what they knew. You know, they wanted to be sure that, you know, what the bands were playing in the bars that they owned was the stuff that people would respond to and dance to and work up a thirst and buy more beer.
You know something? Things never change.
Things haven't changed at all, have they?
No.
Well, Introduction was Terry Kath composition. He wrote it specifically as a way to open our concerts, because out of all the repertoire we had, we tried everything that we knew or everything we had written up to that point as an appropriate way to open a concert, and nothing worked. So he wrote Introduction to kind of, lyrically, it tells you, you know, what we're going to do. This is us, this is what we're going to do, and this is why we're doing it. And musically, it goes through a lot of changes and kind of gives you an indication of where we're at here musically.
Introduction from the opening of Chicago Transit Authority, sung by guitarist Terry Kath, who, according to Robert Lamb, also wrote the song Introduction. You probably know the legend behind the first album's name. It was the rapid transit system in Chicago back then. But there were many band names before arriving at Chicago Transit Authority.
We wanted to call ourselves the Music Foundation.
Music Foundation.
We even have an old 8x10 glossy of all of us dressed in shark skin with razor cuts.
Yes.
And standing in sort of a construction pit somewhere in Chicago. Mm. Somehow we got hooked up with a local booking agent and manager who thought that the big thing was a better name. And he paid for the suits and paid for the photographs. So we said, fine, call us anything you want, man.
Right. You're buying. I guess we'll take the name and not argue about it.
So one of our first gigs was at a good dance club in Rockford, Illinois, who advertised in a local paper up there. And they had difficulty clearing the big thing past their censors. Who thought the big thing was some reference to
some
phallic reference or something.
You're kidding.
So we got to Rockford and we saw ourselves advertised as the Big Sounds. Well, again, it didn't really matter. So we worked as the Big Sounds in Rockford, as the big thing in, you know, Peoria and Milwaukee. But by the end of the year, we were working as CTA.
It's a little hard to build a following when they change the name every week, depending on what town you're in, or what newspaper you're advertising.
Well, I think we're at the level where nobody was actually following us. They were showing up, you know, once they heard us, you know, people would show up. But I don't think they went as far as following us from town to town.
Just don't know. I don't have time to sit there. So let's go. And I say,
Does Anybody Really Know What Time It Is? From Chicago Transit Authority. Here's the author and singer, Robert Lamb.
Peter is the tenor voice. His is the highest voice. Songs like Question 67, 68, and then later on, you know, If You Leave Me Now, you know. So he's that very, very identifiable voice. And then I'm sort of somewhere between Terry and Peter. It's the less intense of the two lower voices, and Terry's is the more gravelly,
kind of a
smoky husky, screamy voice. So that's my voice on Does Anybody Really Know What Time It Is, and also my song. What inspired the lyrics, where I was walking down a street one day, and I happened to be passing by the entrance of a very small kind of art film theater. This is in New York. I asked the guy what time it was. And he said, "Does anybody really know what time it is? Does anybody really care?" He really said that to me. That was it.
I can't believe that's...
Who knows? He was like a ticket taker. He was an usher. He was like an out-of-work philosophy major. Who knows what he was, you know?
That great song by Chicago Transit Authority would become a big hit 2 years later on Top 40 Radio, but more from this album would follow. Up next, we find out from Chicago's Robert Lamb, who masterminded the creative vision and the considerable risk-taking employed on this bold debut. For this and your other favorite interviews, visit inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the anniversary of Chicago Transit Authority, Part 1.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Robert Lamb of Chicago with Redbeard.
Thanks, Robert. Lamb introduces us to the band Chicago's starting lineup when the Chicago Transit Authority album was released.
Towards the summer of 68, we're Danny Serafin on drums, Terry Kath guitar, Robert Lamb keyboards, Jimmy Panko trombone, Lee Lockney trumpet, Walter Parizader woodwinds, and another band in Chicago called The Exceptions just fired their bass player, Peter Cetera. So we figured, okay, this would be a great opportunity to pick up another singer and a bass player and free me up from playing bass pedals. Because he was getting crazy. I was playing, you know, organ with left hand, piano with right hand, singing and kicking bass pedals.
That's outrageous. You know,
I mean, I'm schizophrenic enough, but is there such a thing as quadraphrenic? So by the end of the summer of 68, Peter had joined the band, and Jimmy Gersio, who was our first producer, really was our mentor in the beginning, came and heard the band, loved what he heard, and began working on setting it up so that we could get to California and, you know, continue to work on the material that would eventually end up on the Chicago Transit Authority album.
That's a good, I'm glad you brought up Jim at this point. Who was he to be able to help CTA at this point?
Well, Jimmy was a Chicago musician who had played, incidentally, in that band that I first talked about, the band that traveled with Dick Clark.
Wow.
He was the original bass player in that band and got Terry Kath the gig in that band when he went on to play bass for Chad and Jeremy, who were part of the British invasion.
Sure.
And so Jimmy was beginning to build a little bit of a power base with CBS. I think Chad and Jeremy were with CBS and was writing and playing some sessions around New York on CBS sessions, and got involved with the Buckinghams, who were a Chicago band.
Right.
And ended up producing, you know, a couple of their big records, a couple of their big LPs. And apparently had developed a production deal, independent producer deal, with CBS. So he had a leg to stand on. He had something to offer CBS, and he had something to offer us. And he was then beginning to form his music conglomerate on the West Coast, which included, you know, management, record production, music publishing, business management.
We'll be right back.
The key person that Robert Lamb referred to is James William Guercio, Chicago's producer and later manager, recording and releasing the Chicago Transit Authority album in the first year of the Nixon presidency, with the sounds of actual anti-Vietnam War demonstrators being beaten by police and National Guard at the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago, was a huge risk, but it showed great social awareness. Here's Robert Lamb.
Did you have an overall musical goal? Did you realize that this was pretty much a musical experiment? Or was it so natural to this aggregation that you didn't realize that you were really getting into uncharted territory when it comes to pop or rock music?
Well, kind of a combination of the two. We knew that we wanted to do something original. We knew that we wanted to break new ground. We knew we wanted to wed horns into the actual composition and not let the brass just be playing riffs behind the song or behind the singer. We wanted to make that an integral part of the band. But not only that, but we wanted to open up the concept of rock songwriting. You know, we wanted to be able to play something that as far out as you know, Frank Zappa, and still be able to dance to it, you know, and still have it, you know, be able to be programmed on radio, you know.
Have a sense of melody.
A
pop sensibility.
Exactly. I always wanted to be rhythmically, I always wanted to break out of the prison of 4-4 all the time.
For a non-musician, 4-4 beat,
right? I wanted to break out of that. I wanted to get into other time. I knew that we could play rock and roll in other time signatures. I knew that we could do it. So, you know, there was all of that kind of bouncing around and experimenting going on. You know, we didn't know exactly what it was going to be. I mean, it was not like we had a clear, complete view of what it was going to be in the end or the way it would be perceived, you know, but we did have some goals. We did realize that this was an experiment. That was very exciting. I was writing some songs like that, but it was Guercio. It was Guercio saying, you know, this is important. Most of you guys don't see it. I mean, he didn't say this, but this was his attitude. Most of you guys don't see it. Most of you guys don't know the effect of not only your music, but music in general yet. You will, but you don't understand it. I do. And I'm telling you that this stuff is important, and it's worth writing about, and it's worth putting on the records.
That's Robert Lamb commenting on Chicago's original producer, Jim Guercio.
Hi, this is Robert Lamb of Chicago, in the studio for Chicago Transit Authority with Redbeard.
Thanks again, Robert. Here's a sad indictment of the culturally stunted times in which we live now. This Chicago Transit Authority debut, a double album, sold over 2 million copies initially. Yet today, you couldn't even get a major label to release it. And even if one did, they couldn't get it played on terrestrial radio. Yet the band Chicago is second only to the Beach Boys as the most successful American group of all time. Here's Chicago keyboard player and vocalist Robert Lamb.
I think that there's some cause and effect, but I also I think on a larger sense, it has to do with what's going on in our culture, and what's going on politically and socially in our country.
The social and political climate that Chicago Transit Authority was born in and and first writing in, things like that. I mean, change with a capital C, what's going on, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the band just reflected the time.
Yeah.
Things changed.
I mean, some of it was kind of pinheaded and bean-brained, but, you know, I mean, we were just kids the times they were changing, as Dylan had predicted. And, you know, so we were very much caught up in that and very much, you know, trying in some sense to consciously reflect it, and in other ways, unconsciously playing about it, you know, more than we really thought. To be able to do a record like Chicago Transit Authority, to be able to have a record with freeform guitar on it, to be able to do, you know, a number of double-sided records with extended solos, to have the freedom to be able to write not only horn ensembles, but, you know, complete section ensembles where we play fairly sophisticated harmonies and unisons together. To be able to have the freedom we were lucky to have happened, you know, at a time when, you know, the music industry was very open. You know, the people who were running the music, running the record companies, the people who were the A&R people, the people who were programming radio, FM radio. Everybody's very open to all of that. You know, sort of the stranger the better. That was the attitude at the time, or the newer the better, you know. So we were lucky to have occurred during that period. You know, I don't know what it would be like if a band like CTA was evolving now. I think it would be a very difficult thing.
Next, the friends from the Windy City put wind beneath their wings and fly west and into rock history. For this and your other favorite rock star interviews, visit inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the anniversary of Chicago Transit Authority, Part 1.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Robert Lamb of Chicago with Redbeard. I have to credit Guercio for those kinds of things that showed up on the record. They really had a cinematic approach to records. You know, I'm not a producer, and I don't fully understand all technical aspects of making records, and I certainly didn't when we made this first record. But I could see that he was trying to create orally almost a cinematic image of the band. When you looked at the playback speakers, you could sort of see the band standing there. You know, when a drummer does a fill, he's doing it from his left to his right, or from your right to your left if you're standing there watching the band. And that's what we were trying to do, or what he was trying to do, and what he was very successful at doing on these records.
Producer-manager Jim Guercio felt that to really make it on a national level, the band would have to relocate from the Windy City to either coast, where the record industry meccas were headquartered. Again, Robert Lamb.
We had a choice of either going to New York or to L.A. At that point, we're talking the late 60s, you know, L.A. was really a fertile music place. Mm. Now, people were people were going either to San Francisco or L.A. from the Midwest, and New York was the beginning of the end of New York being the center of music, of pop music. He thought that if we could kind of draw together and, you know, almost live together in a commune-like atmosphere, that we could begin to write and develop and rehearse and really bring to life the potential that he saw that we only suspected. You know, we didn't really have any idea what it was we were going to do, but we were willing to try. Jimmy pretty much gave us an opportunity to believe in ourselves. You know, he really was a Svengali. He was really a mentor. He said, you guys need to hang out together. You guys need to, you know, listen to music together. You need to work together. And we'll make a record. At the end of the summer of 68, we all caravanned out to Los Angeles, set ourselves up in a house in Hollywood, and we began writing and rehearsing every day.
Wow.
And it was very interesting. It was like, you know, my entire life was music, you know, from the time I woke up to the time I went to bed. Occasionally we got some gigs playing out there, but it was more paid rehearsal, you know, playing in front of live people than anything else.
Sun don't never shine.
The sheer level of success of Chicago. 120 million albums, starting with this Chicago Transit Authority bold double album as a debut, tends to eclipse the other accomplishment. This was not a bunch of hired guns assembled for how they looked in a video age screen test. This was a band of brothers.
The attitude from the day that we all got together in Walter's basement and played all afternoon, and we said to each other, you know what, this sounds good. This sounds so good that we're going to do this. And we all shook hands, you know, with the exception of Peter Cetera, who wasn't there yet. But we all shook hands and we said, let's just go for this. Let's just do this. Let's just, I don't even remember what the words were, but it was a feeling. It was like, you know, like a sort of a blood brotherhood thing. You know, it was an agreement to go and do this experiment and not be denied or something. You know, we won't be denied. It was fairly dramatic and kind of stupid in a college kid kind of way, but we always think about it. I mean, lately especially, we just had our band anniversary dinner. We're real proud of it, and we're more and more aware of it. You know, I would say 10 years ago, we weren't, you know, I mean, we had already accomplished quite a bit 10 years ago, but, you know, we didn't have any way to be objective about it. We've been blessed with being able to, you know, get some maturity and be able to look at it and appreciate it for what it is.
This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest, Robert Lamb, who returns next week for part two. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard. For Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2014, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter. And for much more, visit inthestudio.net.